Coming to Netflix right after your monthly subscription renews is an all-new comedy special from your favorite comedian that doesn't play by the rules.
You know what? I don't play by the rules, dude. And if you don't like that, you're a fucking faggot, okay?
If you liked watching Dave Chappelle, you'll love hearing from all these C-list comedians and podcasters we have in store for you.
You know my dad? He's Asian, and he's always like, "Oh, you gotta be a doctor or lawyer. You're funny. You gotta be doctor or lawyer."
It's only a matter of time before these people get me too. So watch now while you can.
Bro, I'm talking to this girl online. And she's like 16, bro. And I'm like, "Bro, what? You're crazy." But seriously, send me a picture of your butt. What's up, my babies?
Remember when having an HBO special was the pinnacle of a comedian's career? Well, on Netflix, we say, fuck you. Go on every single podcast you can find and shill your special because we pay you by views, like you're a beginner comic doing a bringer show. Welcome to the future, bitch.
My pussy is, like, so gross, you guys. If my pussy was on sale, it would be discounted because it's so gross, you guys.
We put this lame-ass music on everything because you're a dumb sheep who thinks this sounds cool. So fuck you, pay $12 a month, and if I find out you're sharing this account with your ex-girlfriend, I swear to God I will come in your house and fucking murder you because that's theft of service. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lower Your Expectation. Hope you enjoyed that intro. I had a lot of fun recording that. It was a lot of fun to pull out my handheld mic and do the voices of the comedians. Hope you guys like the sketches as much as I do. Like I've said before, if it's just me talking, it just feels kind of lazy. It feels like something that anyone could do. And part of the whole fun of this show to me that makes it different than a lot of other podcasts I've seen, besides not having a built-in audience, which is something I'll talk about later, besides not having a built-in audience like every other friggin' comedian podcast, if I'm just talking into the mic, it's just lame. I mean, I could just do that and like have them out, you know, one after another, but I like that I have to, you know, think and work on something a little bit extra for you guys, so I like to do one skit at the beginning. And by the way, at the end of the episode, I say, "But before you go," and then I have like a little audio remix skit that I do. For the first time ever, I listened to this show with a friend of mine in their car, which was really fun and kind of bizarre because we're listening to my voice like through their truck speakers. And then I'm there to give live commentary while it's going on. And one thing I notice is that as soon as I go to the ending, Once I'm clearly like wrapping up the show at the end with the music, it's time to turn off the show. I think most people are just like, "Well, that's the end of that. I've done my part and I've listened to my friend Justin for an hour or so. Now it's time to turn it off." But you're missing some of the funniest parts of the show if you do that. Just FYI, like the funniest parts of the show, in my opinion, is my little cherry on the top that I put at the end of the show, which is totally a ripoff of the old Daily Show moment of Zens. But I have like something kind of funny. Like I did like a mashup with Dragon Ball Z and Alex Jones. Sometimes in that case too, by the way, I don't want to be a thieving jerk about that. I didn't create that mashup with Dragon Ball Z and Alex Jones. Someone else did on the internet. No one knows who made it. It's one of those things that's been posted and then like deleted, and no one really knows who the origin of that is. But because this is a pirate ship radio podcast that has no dams given about any sort of copyright or anything like that, I just put it up. I use a website called SaveTheVideo.com, and I use that to download M4A files of the audio to put it on there. So, you know, a lot of times I'll just find something funny like that and put it at the end and maybe add like a little bit of some extra audio bits to it. But the long story short of it is, if you're not listening to the very end of the file, you are missing out on some of the funniest parts. So Just keep that in mind. Is you ain't got to turn off the dial right away whenever Jaywalk starts wrapping it up at the end. You know, give it a second and listen for the little cherry on top that I give of this delicious podcast Sunday that you're enjoying right now. So I'm recording this on Sunday night, which is Father's Day. Tomorrow I'm getting a punching bag. I'm getting a fighting punching bag to hang up in my cabin. I've been going on this thing lately. I've been trying to get in better shape lately. Way too late, you know. Already the quarantine is ending, and I thought I had more time. Damn it! Thought I had more time to lose some weight and put on some muscles, and you know, not look like a total slob whenever I come back out. But it's too late. But I have been working out on kettlebells and watching my diet a lot better, and you know, just not drinking a lot at all. Like really, I've cut down my drinking like to an insane healthy level, which I'm very proud of myself for doing. You know, it's just been kind of working on myself. And with the punching bag, what it reminded me of, kind of my experience with fighting in general. You know, I'm not a violent guy at all. Anyone who knows me would be really shocked to ever see me like in any sort of physical confrontation scenario. But in my blood, there is a fighter, and that is my father. That is my dad, who lived like a 1980s Karate Kid life. I was gonna like ask him about this, and it'd probably be more realistic to interview my pops and ask him, you know, what the true story is. But then it wouldn't be as fun as what I've invented in my mind about this, because the stories I've heard and kind of the pictures I've seen just seriously paint like this like 80s Karate Kid image, which is amazing. My dad loved karate as a kid. That was his biggest thing in high school, was he was a karate fucking master, and he got in fights all the time. He would tell me that, you know, he was, you know, back in the 80s in SoCal in his high school, that, you know, since he was since his big thing was fighting, that's what like defined him, was, martial arts and stuff. He would get challenged all the time by jackoffs in the school, as they would always want to see what he was made of, and he would whoop their ass like immediately. Like it wasn't even like a joke. Like I mean it wasn't even like a fair fight. And actually, my mom's brother, one of the things he's always told me, he's like, I knew your dad was a badass because I just heard so many stories about him kicking other people's asses. Like he was like, that was a reputation that your father had before I met him and I realized he was dating your mom, was that he could kick anyone's ass. And he thought that was super cool. And, you know, frankly, I do think that's super fucking cool. My dad, it's also, by the way, it's Father's Day today on Sunday. I gave him a call yesterday because my sister was out at his place. He lives in a cabin in West Texas, which is funny because I live in a cabin in Southern California, something we share in common. His cabin is a lot bigger, though. His cabin is probably about like 13 times as big as my cabin. So, you know, but also mine's next to the ocean. So suck on that. Shouldn't say that to my dad. Actually, I take that back. Sorry, Dad. Don't suck on anything. But, you know, it's Father's Day. And, you know, I was on social media earlier, kind of seeing the Father's Day greetings and blessings to everyone. And something I've kind of noticed, you know, that's been kind of recent, is a lot of people are, you know, kind of talking shit about Father's Day because sadly, you know, they didn't have a good dad, or, you know, they didn't have a dad. And, you know, it's, I feel for them a lot with that, because I had a kick ass dad, even besides him being a karate master, like ass kicking, dude, he's just always been an inspiration to me when it comes to my professionalism, especially like whenever I work on things, whenever I'm doing business with people and like on the phone, I can like hear myself sounding like him. It's super funny. Like I have the same like style when it comes to, you know, getting the job done and like being someone that people can count on. And that is also fun. And like, you know, is someone who's like interesting to talk to. You know, one of the things about this lockdown is that even though I do super well working at home, like all the jobs that I do, I can do at home, my computer, you know, I'm a video editor and mostly an audio editor. So I can do all that at home in my boxers without a care in the world. Like, it's not a problem. But just like my dad, what gets me work is my interactions with people. Like, I have to have that FaceTime, that time where they can get to where new people can get to know me and kind of see, you know, that I'm an honest, you know, what you see is what you get, and I'm a hardworking person. I need that time, and my dad is like the master at that. You know, he would just, whenever he was working in the city before he decided to pack everything up and live in a cabin in West Texas as a farmer, which is a whole nother story. But he, you know, ran a successful furniture company in the city in North Texas. And, you know, his day-to-day job, you know, was very stressful, but, you know, these clients would call him and like hang out with him, and he would do lunches, and they just loved my dad. You know, they would do like anything to just work with him, and just because, you know, whenever you're doing business, this is something that I've ran into a lot, you know, is like being competent and like someone that, you know, you can like count on and like have a conversation with, and, you know, just isn't waiting just to fuck you immediately. Those people are gold. I don't care where you are. Like, those people are gold, and you just hold on to them so hard. And my dad has always been like that. So, you know, his clients, and he might have a different story to this because I probably don't know the bad situations that he might have had with a few clients. But from my experience, you know, it was people who just love to invite him out to really fancy stuff all the time. He would get like these amazing like VIP passes to Cowboys Stadium all the time. And he supposedly had a secret code word that he would use at Cowboys Stadium to get him wherever he wants. Like, there was a phrase where he could walk anywhere in Cowboys Stadium, like any of the VIP, like locker rooms, anything. And if he just said these words, any security personnel would know that he was like super VIP and would just let him in. And I know it's true because I've seen like pictures of him. He did a lot of, he did furniture work. He did really high end, awesome furniture work for very wealthy and like sort of very wealthy and connected people in North Texas, and like, you know, wealthy oil people in North Texas. What's funny is that as out here, you know, in California, we have a lot of rich people, you know, like it's just sort of the norm. You just have a lot of rich people. And I think in a way they kind of look, you know, down at like, you know, Texans and stuff because, you know, we just want to like shoot our guns and go hunting and stuff. But the rich people in Texas are like on like a different universe than even the wealthy people out there, even like celebrities and stuff. I'm talking about like billionaire types, like people who own whole cities and, you know, are so ludicrously wealthy, yet they, you know, live a very humble, simple life. And that's something I've always kind of missed, honestly. You know, these are wealthy people. You wouldn't know that they were super rich. You know, they just wear jeans and cowboy boots and are very like, very down to earth. But if you know anything, they own like so much shit. It's like ridiculous. Like, they're crazy, crazy wealthy. And my dad would, you know, worked with them and created all of their kitchens and their conference tables and all of their badass stuff. I actually got to design a custom wine room once for this dude. It was so cool. It was this guy who basically bought a whole like mini mall section in North Texas, and he rented out, you know, all the buildings to tenants to turn it into their store, restaurant, or whatever. And he had his own office, and he had my dad, me, this is whenever I work with my dad. So it was actually me and my dad were working together at this point. And I would help him with drawings. I'm very good with like with an illustrator and drawing stuff on the computer. So I actually learned like amazingly fast how to draw scale, like technical drawings to like design furniture and like cabinets and stuff. I wouldn't actually come up with how they're made. But what would happen is my dad would draw it on a piece of paper. He would like sketch like a really crude sketch, but it would have the dimensions like perfect. So it would be look like a cartoonish drawing of like a piece of furniture, but he would write in like 32 inches here, like 2 inches here, like a 3-inch gap here. And then I would take that and create scale drawings to give to the people to cut up the pieces to assemble and stuff. And it was super fun. I really liked it a lot. I still keep it on my portfolio under design work. And it's such a weird, like surprising, it's such a weird like outlier in all my design work. I used to be a graphic designer, mostly in the beverage industry. If you ever go to like a 7-Eleven or a Stripes, there are sometimes these like tea urns that say Teasers on them, Teasers tea. They're like a competitor to Coca-Cola's Teavana or something like that, but they're in the iced tea market, which in the South is like fucking huge. So it's mostly a Southern thing. Like it's probably, you don't really see them in California that much. When you go in the South, there's some tea urns that old Jaywalk actually designed. So I have, you know, I would do graphic design, and I also would make logos and business cards and the packaging and stuff like that. But one of the funnest things on my design portfolio is I literally have like a wine room, a secret wine room that I put together. And it was super badass because back to my story with this guy who owned the mini mall, he in his own words, just needed a place to collect the checks and hide away from his wife and kids. So he just had this like baller office that we put together and with like custom molding and fantastic furniture work. And what I got to work on the most, and actually got to do a lot of the design behind this, was in his office, like fucking Batman, you could press on a book, on a bookcase, and the bookcase would open up, and there was a temperature and humidity controlled wine cellar with over 1,000 bottles of wine inside. So I actually designed the whole room. And, you know, figured out like how many bottles could be fit in there. Cause like this is like one of those dudes who has like the infinite money glitch in life. So, the amount of wine that was going in that room was how many we could fit in that room. That was, how he was going to decide, how much wine to buy. It was literally, we're going to fill every fucking hole in there with a fancy bottle of wine. So, I designed this, we even like designed this awesome hidden, hinge system and stuff. So it was super badass. I really, really liked working with them. And, that was my dad, this really talented, that is my dad. My dad's not dead. I'm very, very lucky that he's not dead. My dad, you know, is very, very, very intelligent and, great with business. But like I said, as a younger guy, he was just this badass fighter. And on top of being, you know, like this fighter, it's funny because you see like a lot of like, martial arts people and stuff. Sometimes they have a tendency to be like kind of short dudes, you know, like especially like boxing and stuff, or, you know, like people who are really into like fighting and MMA, they tend to be like short, scrawny guys. Maybe that's a little bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's kind of an overcompensating thing, you know. But my dad is enormous. He's like 6'5". Like he's back then, you know, he was a gigantic like a guy who you would not want to fuck with like ever. You know, I was a very, very good kid. I did not get out of line ever. And my dad never had to lay a fucking hand on me. Just his like presence alone could be terrifying. Like if he was mad, you know, like there was no like screaming and throwing shit. Like he could just look at me and like I would just run away. And if I ever did something wrong at home with my mom always knew that was like the nuclear option for me, is to say, I'm going to tell dad when he gets home. Like that, I would just be begging like, oh my God, like you can fucking smack me upside the face, mom. Like you can do anything you want to me, you know, like you can fucking destroy my Dreamcast, but do not make my dad give me that scary look when he comes home. So, you know, that's so, you know, even back then, even though he was like a trained fighter, it would just be funny because he just, you know, no one would fuck with him except for some assholes in school. And, you know, there was also a story I heard with my uncle too, who said that my other uncle, his brother, that one time in California, they got pulled over. There was a road rage incident in SoCal with his brother. And his brother tells me a story that this guy stopped and, you know, like he was just like yelling and like laying on the horn behind my dad, who was driving in a truck with his brother. And then they stop. And the guy, like, you know, gets out of his car and is like looking at the back and like screaming like, fuck you, motherfucker. And my dad just steps out of the vehicle and immediately the guy just goes, oh, sorry, dude, and just goes right back in. So it's funny because like I think I take a little bit more after my mom in terms of that I'm not like really aggressive about, you know, physical confrontation. I did try karate as a kid. It's something I regret a lot, not sticking with it, because I would be fucking unstoppable today. Like if I could, you know, have everything that I got going on for me right now, and I could beat up like anyone who was in my way, like at the drop of a hat, like I'd be too powerful. I'd be too powerful for this world, to be honest. So I've got to, I guess it's like kind of God's way of being like, no, you know, you can be intelligent and, you know, you can have like some good, like nonviolent skills, but you know, you can't like be kicking. You can't be like, you know, Bruce Lee on top of this, but that's what my dad was. And it's funny because, you know, even as he got older, it's like that sense that he can just fucking kick anyone's ass at any time and doesn't take shit from no one, like, still is a part of him. Whenever my sister, who's 10 years younger than me, she had a very small bullying problem at school. There was a guy who in the parking lots, this was whenever she's like a teenager, like everyone was just starting driving, so she's like 16 years old. There was just this jackass, probably some kid who was like, you know, trying to hit on her in the way that boys who are dumbasses try to do. But he was just, you know, kind of like giving her shit in a weird kind of like stalking in the parking lot kind of way. And my dad straight up was like, I'm going to find out what his name is. I'm going to find out where he lives. And I'm going to beat his fucking ass. Like, it's that simple. And I was like, Dad, no. It's like, that's a 16-year-old. It's like, we can't show up to a 16-year-old's house and like drag him out in the lawn and give them the beating of a lifetime. I'd like to do that too, but we can't handle it that way. So, you know, I was like, Dad, I'll handle it. Don't worry. And he's like, okay, well, you can go beat him up. I'm like, no. I'm not going to beat him up either, Dad. We're going to snitch. I decided that snitching was the best move because at the time, her teacher, because it was a small little school where they would all drive away from in the parking lot. And I actually knew, I was friends with one of the teachers there who was right next to the parking lot. And I just straight up told him, I'm like, hey, you know, my sister is having some problems. There's some jackass out there. So just keep an eye out. You know, if you see something going on, you know, stop it. And he was super, super, nice about it too. He was like, I wouldn't tolerate that at all. You know, especially with my sister. My sister's such a sweet, pretty girl. Like, you know, it's, that's why I think I realized that snitching was the best move, because once I like got the word out, you know, that, this poor girl is doing fucking nothing wrong, is getting some trouble. It was like a hawk. It was like immediately that shit stopped, because, you know, now, this guy is a great teacher, you know, is now watching it, and there was never a problem again. That's not how I solved my bullying problems though, as a kid. Even though I'm not a violent person, I do not, you know, get in fights. I'm, you know, I mostly because I don't have the health insurance to cover that. I think what stopped me from getting in a lot of physical altercations is just the logic that, like, if I lose a tooth or something, like, that's going to be a huge financial problem for me. You know, if I like break a bone or some shit, like, I just got insured for the first time in a long ass time, like months ago. Like, I, you know, so that's always like kept me out of trouble mostly, is that I'm like, even if I did tell some guy, like, let's fucking do it. And let's, like, you know, and I put up my fist and got in a fight, I better land every single punch, and they better not get anything back at me. It better be what they call in Mortal Kombat, a flawless victory. And funny enough, my fighting history is that I have been in 3 actual physical altercations in my life. And I have a 2-1 record on them. The first two, they were the exact same scenario. Talking shit with a kid. This was in the first two were also like before high school, you know, kid talking shit or a kid, you know, messing with me. And then it's time to fight. And I throw a right punch as hard as I can at their face, and then they start bleeding and run away and cry, and I'm screaming at them, please hit me back! Just hit me back! Please hit me back! Don't tell the teacher! Please don't tell the teacher! Just hit me back! That happened twice in my life. The first time was just a simple, you know, run-of-the-mill. I think I was like like 11 years old or something, and, you know, just some neighbor kid who, you know, we just got we decided to throw fists, you know, we're just going to do it. But that's exactly how it went down. I punched him in the face. He started crying. I started running away, and I started yelling at him to please hit me back. And then the second time it happened was actually like probably one of the most defining moments in my life and this other kid's life, because, it happened in middle school. And in middle school, you know, I was a little bit of a chunky kid, a little bit of a chunky, nerdy kid. I quit the karate because I didn't like being yelled at by the instructor. So I had no karate skills, and I would just get relentlessly bullied, you know, just all the time, being in locker rooms, they would do shit. Like, they would take my clothes away from me, you know, and just you know, pinching nipples, all that kind of like bullshit that kids do. And I just kind of put up with it because I was a coward. To put it bluntly, I was afraid of getting hurt more, so I didn't do it. So, one day, this is after years of this shit going down, where I would be like, you know, bullied mostly in my PE athletics kind of classes. I get bullied, and I was running around the track in PE, and this kid decides to trip me in front of everyone. Just puts out his leg and trips me, and I fall. And after that happened, it was like in a movie, like that white hot rage that just comes over, and you just like I turned into like a shark. Like, I got like shark eyes. Like, I just got like tunnel vision, because all I remember in like this brief period was I fell, I heard a laugh, and then this kid, once again, his face was totally bloody and he was running away to the teacher. So, you know, what I've pieced together, what happened was I was tripped, and then I immediately got up and I swung at him a right fist to his jaw as hard as I possibly could. And he immediately started crying and ran away to the teacher. And I don't know why this came up in my head, but I'm more worried about getting in trouble. Especially at that point, I was like a straight A student. Like, I was the last person my teachers would ever have a think about having like a disciplinary problem, like whatsoever. And no one else either. Like, my whole class was like so shocked by this thing that just went down, that like nerdy Justin just like fucking seriously injured someone, you know. And so he's like holding his face and running away. And it was a long like track. It was like, you know, like those like football fields where they have the track around the football field. So I'm on like one end of the football field track. We're all running around circles around it. And our coach/teacher is like on the other end. And it was just like this long run. I could see this kid just holding his face, just crying, not listening to me. And I was like, I was like, just hit me back. I'm sorry, dude. Like, I'm apologizing. I had no reason to apologize. The guy was a fucking asshole, you know, and shouldn't have like messed with me. But still, I was like trying to get out of like the punishment from it, you know, and hoping that maybe if he like hit me back, then it would be like kind of fair or something. Even whenever I'm assaulting people, I'm nice, guys. So, you know, he was running away to the teacher, And I'm like kind of following behind him, but he's way faster than me. And plus, I was kind of out of breath because I was a fat kid, you know, trying to run around a track. So I couldn't quite catch up to him. He was a much skinnier guy. So, you know, he got to the teacher first. I could see him talking and shit, you know, and I was like, oh God, this is it. And so once I finally caught my fat ass back up to the coach, they told me I have to go to the principal's office immediately, of course. And I went to the principal's office, and luckily I don't know if this was like pre-Columbine or like right around that time. But I remember they were really concerned that I was like snapping or something, because they were just looking at like my whole like history of like discipline, and it was zero. Like I'd never even went to detention. Like I was a perfect like fucking teacher's pet nerdy student, and the fact that I like violently assaulted a kid, you know, even though it was self-defense. You know, I guess I could have like ran away from that, but it was, you know, he started it first. He like, I think tripping counts, right? I don't know. We're far past, you know, any sort of like legal ramifications for how long it's been away. But, you know, the teachers, they actually said that the parents were considering pressing charges against me because of it. Like they were really upset, and they made me go to a like counselor and shit and like talk about like what makes me angry and everything. And that day I was suspended from school. They called my mom to come pick me up, and I went back to the locker room to grab my stuff, and the entire locker room clapped and cheered. And I know people say that like, you know, to make a story like sound cooler, and that, you know, that's just like what happens in the movies. This actually fucking happened to me. Like I went in the locker room, and everyone, even my former bullies, were applauding and saying, fuck yeah, Justin, like, hell yeah, like what a badass. Because this kid that I hit was a total spastic like asshole anyways that no one really liked. and everyone was just cheering me on, and was just, I was like the king of that middle school that day. And even like walking out of the building with my mom, you know, I just like, just was getting all this like adulation and like rounds of applause from kids, to the point that my mom had to like, was like grabbing my arm even harder and was like, there's nothing to be proud of about this, Justin. There's nothing to be proud of about this. And, got me in the car. And then, you know, of course, once my dad found out, it was, one of the few times where I was happy that my dad was told about this, because he didn't really quite have as big of a problem with it as my mom did. You know, I wouldn't say he was proud of it, but, you know, he always told me to defend myself, and I did. And so, you know, he just kind of just let me do my time with the school. I got, you know, suspended for like, I think a week or so. And then had to do what they call ISS, in school suspension. And that was the second fight I got in, which was a flawless victory. And like I said, it really changed my life a lot, because it gave me like a ridiculous new appreciation for my space and stuff. Like, you know, ever since then, I didn't get any more fights, but I wouldn't tolerate shit. You know, like if someone was coming on to me and doing that, I would challenge some fights, no problem. You know, like I there are many times, you know, I would, you know, I wouldn't cower if someone was giving me trouble, but they wouldn't anymore. That's what was crazy. It's like, especially in that school, and the kids who came from that school to the high school with me, I was never fucked with again by people who knew me. Like that just didn't happen. Like, as a matter of fact, I gained some friends from people who bullied me, were now just my friends. Because I'm, you know, because now I'm a, like a, you know, I'm a badass basically. So that was fight number two. And the third one, and I don't even know if you can like call this a fight, because this was an adult one. This was a few years ago. And, whenever I first came here to California, I had this leather jacket on, and I think that this leather jacket, sort of like with Frosty the Snowman and his magical hat, this was a magic jacket that whenever I would put this on and go somewhere, I became like this different, like badass person that really I had no business being. I would joke that anytime I wear this jacket, I would either start a fight or get laid. And it usually would happen that way. And now whenever I say start a fight, I don't mean like physically. I mean that like I would tell someone like, let's take this outside or something. You know, whenever you're an adult, I think most people are smart enough like me to say that, you know, guys will love to challenge a fight. You know, I think it's actually kind of healthy in a way that, you know, you can settle a difference with a lot of chest puffing and a lot of, what'd you say, motherfucker? Like, fuck you, pussy. My favorite move that guys do, and it's so lame, but it has saved so many hospital visits and police, so many hospital visits and lockups. That is the move whenever a guy is like, ooh, I would fight you, but my friends are holding me back. I can't. I wish they weren't holding me back because I would totally fucking kill you if they weren't holding me back. Because that happened a few times because, you know, being in a new city, especially like Lompoc, whenever I was in Lompoc, goddamn, those guys are hard asses, you know? And, you know, I would, like I had, for example, had something happen where I was at a bar, not the nicest bar that I found out later on, but a move that I tried to come up with to make new friends was that I would go to bars completely by myself and I would just buy drinks for people next to me, you know, mostly tequila shots, you know, just for fun. I would be like, hey, I'm getting a shot. You want one too? And for the most part, you know, people enjoyed that. And sure enough, I actually would, you know, make some friends, at least for that night, usually not anywhere past that. But you know, I would, and I wouldn't really look at like who I'm sharing a drink with. It could be a man or a woman. You know, I have lots of female friends. I don't really like see an issue with that. But in this case, the girl that I gave a shot to, her boyfriend was there and did not take too kindly to this move that I did. He thought I was like hitting on her or something. And just for the record, I can do a lot better. I can do a lot better than your girlfriend, sir. I'm sorry. But you know, he was upset and trying to be a hard ass. And as soon as he, you know, started getting in my face, I said, then let's go outside, motherfucker. I said that right to him. I was like, you got a problem with me. Let's go outside. And I found out in California, like that is like a serious fighting word that is not used a lot at all. People out here just like to kind of scream at each other and stuff and just, you know, do like a sucker punch or something. It very rarely is someone going to do the gentleman Texan thing, which is let's take this outside. And that's what I told him. I told this guy who I had absolutely no business getting in a physical altercation with because he had all of his friends with him and looked quite big and mean. But I had the power of the leather jacket over me. The leather jacket power was just too much. And I said, let's take this outside. And as soon as I said that, because this is Lompoc and because it's a kind of a dangerous bar, the bartender was like, hell no, immediately, absolutely not going to happen. So he motioned for security. Security pulls me out. And while security's pulling me out, I'm just screaming at this dude, fuck you, you fucking pussy. I was like, yeah, you fucking stay in there, you fucking pussy. And his friends were like holding him back, you know, he's just looking at me like, oh, and I'm just screaming. And yes, a lot of alcohol was involved in this night as well. He's just yelling and screaming at me. And once I got outside, I also had a awesome experience with my white privilege at work because the police showed up, Lompoc PD showed up. And I am like, I am so wasted. Like, it's like ridiculous. Like I can barely stand, you know? And as soon as I see the police lights, I just raise both hands up as high as I can in the air the entire time I'm talking to them. I got my hands straight up in the air and I'm putting on my best calm white person voice. I'm sorry, officer. I maybe said some things that I shouldn't have, and I'm going to go ahead and just go home. I'm sorry if I caused a scene here. You know, I'm just going to go home. My house is just a few blocks away, so I'm just going to go ahead and walk home. And he said, okay, be safe. And I put my hands down and walked home, and they shut the fucking bar down for the night. They shut it down on a Saturday night at like 10:30 at night. And it was all my fault. And the funny part is too, is that I went back to that bar and they never had a problem with me. I don't know if they like didn't recognize me. It's really hard to like not remember what I look like. I have this like goofy ass gray hair and like crooked teeth, and I'm a tall blue-eyed white guy. But they let me in, and that was that story. But back to the actual fights I've had. The last one was where I finally got to Santa Barbara, and this is a friend of mine actually now. He's a cool guy, but I guess I said something, or maybe it might have been the power of the leather jacket again. I did have the leather jacket on again, but I was ridiculously wasted walking around downtown with him and like another friend of his, and I must have said something because I just remember coming to with my back on the ground in the middle of State Street in Santa Barbara, and this guy is on top of me, pinning me down, staring me nose to nose, and is like, are you gonna stop? Are you gonna stop? Are you gonna stop? And first thing I do, is like try to pull away, and I realize this guy's like actually really fucking strong. I was like, this guy is way too strong to be on top of me. Like, I'm not gonna win this fight. I gotta end it. I gotta get out of this somehow. And a little tip, if you're in this situation, and this is what got me out, just start laughing. just start giggling. And that's what I did. Once I realized that I'm like way overpowered here, I just started laughing at him, and I was like, this is silly. I'm like, I'll stop. You're right. I'll stop. Okay. And, he let me go, and we got up, and then we hung out and had some more beers together and laughed about the whole thing, because that's what men do. So that's the fighter jaywalk stories from my my dad, spirit, his kung fu spirit within me that comes out. And, I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about my dad this Father's Day. I love him a whole lot. He's a very intelligent, wise, kind person who has always challenged and pushed me, which is really underrated, for a parent. A parent doesn't have to be some like the kid's friend. Sometimes that's actually like detrimental. What my dad always did really well is that he did not put up with me being a jackass. he always knew I could do better, and would push me. And for that reason, I love him. And it's a day later when you're listening to this, but happy Father's Day, Dad.
Everybody was kung fu.
So I thought I'd talk to you a little bit about some things I've been watching. Instead of a movie or a video game, which by the way, video games have not been doing it for me like the last few weeks. I don't know. It's weird. I get through, sometimes I go through phases where I'm like really into it and then I'm just not. And this past few weeks, I just haven't been. So I've been laying off the video games and movies. I've been watching a few things. But in terms of media, I wanted to talk about a channel that is not a TV show or a movie. It's not even really a YouTube channel. It's mostly on Patreon. It's this guy who puts together this show on criminal psychology. His name is Jim Can't Swim. And he has a Patreon account. It's only $1 a month to watch his videos. And these videos, if you're into true crime at all, like you're into police interrogations, this is better than anything you're ever going to find on Netflix. This guy makes the most amazing police interrogation detective videos about true cases. They're mostly centered around the actual police interrogation process. So he'll have videos about different either cases or sort of genres of cases. And he'll show the interrogation room, the techniques of the detectives interrogating the suspects. And he'll, while they're talking, he'll like have little like notes about the technique they're using and, you know, if there's a tell or not of what's going on. And it's just, it's hard to explain. You just gotta see it. I wouldn't be doing it justice. Kind of trying to sum up all it is, but it's, if you're like one of those types, kind of like come on the last show with Nikki talking about true crime and like murderers and stuff like this, it's very fascinating stuff because it's not, you know, the gore and of the victims, or it's not about, you know, the terrible crime per se. It's about the part after the crime, which I think is so fascinating because we can kind of put ourselves in that position, you know, of those, like, if, you know, if you were to like murder someone and then those days afterwards, you know, because very few people get away with it. I hope very few people get away with it, but just that time, you know, where you're like kind of on your own after it happens, you know, and you hacked up the body and you hit it and you're trying to go about your life. And then it just starts unraveling because then the police start asking questions and nobody's perfect. Everyone fucks up some way, has some sort of evidence or some sort of tell that gets them in that interrogation room. And you just imagine, you know, being there. And these police, you know, interrogators, they use so many different techniques to get the truth or to get a confession. And they range from, you know, being really hostile. One of the techniques that you see a lot is where they'll actually talk down. They'll actually start like judging this person's character, even though they know they did something like so fucking awful. I mean, like, you know, like killing a kid or something where, you know, they deserve nothing but like, you know, to be hanged. But what they'll do is they'll start, you know, talking about, you know, we don't think you're a monster. You're not a monster, are you? Because they want just something for them to start to defend themselves so they can, you know, start building up a case. And then the other way around it, it's like the good cop, bad cop thing, is they'll, you know, be on their side and say, hey, you know, I know what you did was just a heat of the moment thing. You know, we all make mistakes. We just need to know, you know, where this body is and all this. So it's really fascinating the way they talk to him, the way they kind of break down people. And like I said, it's $1 a month. It's Jim Can't Swim on Patreon. And I, this is like, to me, the ideal future of the way like television and stuff should be is, you know, instead of all these stupid, like $10 a month plans and everything, it's just like whenever cable was going out the door, the biggest complaint everyone had about cable was that you got to pay for all this shit you're not going to watch, you know. And now like Netflix and Hulu, it's like the same thing. Like whenever I get like Netflix or Hulu, I just purchase it for a show I want to watch or a series. And then I binge the series and then I like get rid of it. Or like everyone else, I just share it with like a girlfriend or something. I use their account. Really the only one that I have consistently is Amazon, but that's just because I use them for shipping and stuff. But all these streaming services are falling into the, in my opinion, they're falling into the same trap of the cable providers, which is that it's too much content that you don't want to watch compared to, you know, what you want to pay to see. And so I like this idea of just $1 for one show. So Jim Can't Swim, you know, it's only $1 a month, you know, to watch all of his videos that he releases. But he has 40,782 patrons. So he's making that much money in dollars. He's making over 40 grand a month to create a very, very good show. And I think that's great. I would love if that would be what the future of TV and series is just paying directly the creators something reasonable, like $1 with enough people is, that's a whole career. if I was getting paid like $40,000 a month to make this fucking podcast, like that would be set for life. I'm done. Like that would be amazing. And I don't have to like make people sign up for a network and do all this other crap. But just FYI, I've decided that this podcast will always be a free podcast. Even if it starts taking me, you know, more time than I need, I'll just get volunteers to do it. And if I need more cash to pay for server space and stuff like that, what I'll do is I'll just ask for donations just to cover that. And I've seen some websites do this before where they have like kind of like a thermometer thing like we used to have in school for fundraisers. And I will just say, hey, I need like $50 this month to cover the cost of servers and I'll take donations. And then once it's at 50, donations are closed. A nonprofit passion only project, which I think is really underrated. You know, we always like look down at amateurs and like, you know, you got to be a professional. It's so cool to be a pro. But in my opinion, an amateur is so much more pure. It's someone who's doing it because they like it, because it's fun to do. You know, we shouldn't, you know, look down on that. And I kind of like the idea in my own life that this is something that is fun to do, that I just do because I love it. And I love, you know, getting this out to my audience. And I want to keep that up. And also gives me an excuse to, like I always say, ignore all the copyrights and use music that I want, not have to use crappy stock music for anything. So, you know, that's kind of my goal is to keep this a nonprofit enterprise just for fun. And, you know, no sponsors, no trying to like get guests on who have ulterior motives to just sell stuff. You know, if I do have guests on more, I want them to have the same attitude that this is just fun. You can say whatever you want. Another rule that I have on this show is that there's no cameras allowed. You know, I don't, I think it makes a much more open conversation with people. Is to not have like a camera shoved in their face and not be like, oh, well, we also got to take pictures for promos and do blah, 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 blah. If you're on the show with me, it's just a microphone. I finally do have a co-working space back open that I can record at. So we don't have to go into like my cabin to record. We have a nice place to record now, but I still want it just to be a pure fun show. But going back to Jim Can't Swim and the interrogation videos, they're just super intelligent and well done and very compelling. And the last one that he had, and this one is actually on YouTube. You can find some of his stuff on YouTube. It's called The Bizarre Case of Stephen McDaniel. Just to kind of give you like a summary of the story is this guy, Stephen, was a turbo nerd who did not get out much and just kind of stayed in his apartment. And there was this pretty girl who moved in the same apartment complex that he was just totally obsessed with. And, you know, he would go, he would, you know, like sneak in her place. And, you know, he tried to like hit on her and, you know, he has no social skills or anything. So it did not work out. And, you know, something that's a big takeaway from this story is this poor woman who was involved in this, who got killed by him. She had all these gut feelings, all this intuition that something was wrong. It's terrible because she talks to her, you know, her friends, say later that she would tell her friends that she thought someone was in the house, you know, and that she thought that something bad was going to happen. And she was murdered right before she moved out. It was literally like the day before she was about to move out of that place because she kept on just feeling weird. And, you know, what's sad about humans is that whenever we have intuition, whenever we have a gut feeling about something, we try to rationalize it way too much. We try to go, oh no, I shouldn't judge that person that way. You know, I'm just being paranoid. When the truth is that our gut feelings, our intuitions, are what has saved us for most of the millennia that we've been evolving and living on this planet. Before we had language, before we had society, it was intuition that would tell us when danger's happening. It's that feeling that you have in your gut that something's not right, that, you know, we would listen to. And in this video, he makes a good point that it's like if you're on the road and you suddenly like swerve and you miss hitting something and you think like, oh, well, where did that come from? You know, I didn't even see it. And, you know, it's not magic. It could be that you saw a car in front of you do kind of the same thing. And without even it triggering the frontal cortex of your brain to figure out what's going on, something much more primitive within you just took action and just did it, because that's whenever, like I said before, you know, our cortex was developed and we had language and all these other things. We would work off instinct. And so that instinct saved your life because you listened to it. And this is my advice for anyone, and especially women. I with my sister, and if I'm lucky enough to have a daughter, the two pieces of advice I'll give them is learn how to use a gun and get one, and trust your gut and intuition no matter what. Even if you feel like you're fucking silly about it, even if you feel like you're going to offend someone, trust your fucking gut. If you're somewhere in a dark place and you're in a parking garage and you get a feeling that someone's there and someone's behind you and you're in danger, move quick. Get in your fucking car immediately. Don't look around. Trust that feeling, and because it will save your life, because there are so many tiny little inputs around you that you don't even like register, that you have adapted to survive by listening to. Other animals don't do that. You know, if you see, if you're walking in the woods or something, and you know, you come across like a deer or a rabbit or something, they run. You know, they don't stop and go, oh, what's this guy doing here? Oh, I should just continue my business because I don't want to be awkward and just run away. They just fucking run. Because they don't know what you're about, they don't know what's going on, and they work off that intuition and they move. So, you know, this doesn't just apply to women, it applies to men too. But the story with the Steve McDaniel case is you gotta trust that gut. You gotta trust it, because she knew something was up, you know, and there's all these terrifying videos that he took, and this is actually what got him busted. Was that he was taking videos inside of her apartment. He would sneak in and then hide in another room and then wait till she was sleeping and take videos and stuff. And this was going on for a while. And like, you know, all the little hints, like the, you know, seeing, probably, you know, noticing that the door maybe was a little bit warm on the handle, or, you know, that this thing that I thought I placed on this table is now moved slightly. Stuff that, as a rational person, you would be like, oh, whatever. She could feel inside that something's fucking wrong. And she didn't act on it fast enough. Not that I'm blaming her as a victim, but you know, it's a case with many, many things where it's too late once you know something's up. So, you know, so the lesson is, you have to like pay attention to that stuff. So this one, the case with Steve McDaniel, it's interesting because it goes through sort of the victim psychology and his, like I said, with the victim psychology being that she, you know, she knew something was up and, you know, didn't act on it, or was, you know, maybe like, maybe even pressured by her friends and stuff to say, ah, oh, you're just tripping, don't worry about it, you know. But with this kid, Steven, it's pretty insane too, because he's on camera, right after this girl goes quote unquote missing. And, he's in the apartment complex. There's a news, camera and crew that comes up to him to ask if he knew her. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, she was just a nice girl, and I don't know who would do this. And I actually, you know, we've been looking for her, and if anyone has any information, you know, like, please, we just want her back safe. And he actually did something kind of smart, well, not smart, devious, but he, right after the crime happened, he murdered her. What a funny podcast this is, huh? He strangled her while she was like sleeping the last night before she decided to move out of the apartment, and then took her body and chopped it up and put it in a bunch of different dumpsters. But the days after she went quote unquote missing, he went in the apartment with her friends to try to find clues and stuff, which was actually a really smooth move if you didn't know it. But the investigators basically said that because he did that, because he came back at the scene of the crime after the crime got committed, any sort of DNA that he had there, like his hair and like footprints and stuff, he had a perfect, like, he had a perfect excuse for it because like he was there after the fact. So they actually couldn't use a lot of the evidence that they collected on him, because his lawyer could easily say, oh, you got that because he was there after she went missing. So after that happened and he went in the apartment, he was on the news and the news was talking about this. He's still pretending that he has no idea, where she is, and is sad about that she's missing. And the news reporter says, how did you feel whenever they found the body? And he goes, the body? Because he hid the body. His whole thing was that he chopped it up and made it, in a bunch of places. But they ended up finding like her torso in a dumpster nearby. And he just you can see his face be like, I am fucked. Like it's over. Like, now it's not, me having just to live with the guilt of this. Like, there's going to be an investigation. This is all kind of unraveling. So he literally like collapses. He collapses down to the ground and starts crying. And, at the time, no one knew what was going on. And they just thought he was really upset because now they've kind of confirmed that, his neighbor was dead. But the truth was that he was crying for his own sake, because he knew that now he's fucked, and that now the investigation has begun. And then at that point, they actually go to him being interrogated, and he totally shuts down like comatose style and doesn't talk to the investigators at all. They actually had a really hard time convicting him, except he took fucking videos of her and saved it on a flash drive. And they found the flash drive, and that was it. And so thank God he's in jail now for that. He's convicted and put in jail. What a hilarious episode we have today. But, they all can't be super funny. I wanted just to give you something that's interesting to watch. That's better, in my opinion, than any crap that's on Netflix right now. God damn, there's just nothing good. Don't get me started on the comedy specials. The terrible fucking comedy special that everyone needs to have now. But that's a really, really great program. If you're interested in crime, it's called Jim Can't Swim. There's a lot of free episodes on YouTube, but the real gold is on the Patreon account. It's only $1 a month, and I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Well, guys, this was probably not the funniest podcast I did. Hope it wasn't too serious. I actually do have some other funny topics on here, but I want to save them for next week. I have some commentators and stuff that I kind of wanted to roast and get into. But I decided that I wanted to base it off kind of my dad, because it's Father's Day, and with the karate stuff. And the Jim Can't Swim thing was just on my mind, and I thought it was awesome. And it was just in my notes. Basically, the way I make this show is throughout the week I have notes, and I'll write them down, and then I'll sort of like curate them in the weekend and figure out which ones I actually want to talk about, and which ones are too mean. Mostly which ones are too mean. I've been warned already, do not make fun of comedians. That they're very, very sensitive, and that sucks, because I love comedy, and because of that, I love to critique comedy. Like, I actually, a joke one of my friends has is that I'm like the comic critic, because I'll go to comedy shows and just be like, I wouldn't have said the joke that way. I didn't like, the way that he had that delivery, and I think he's a little too full of himself. So, it's just me. But I was warned that do not make fun of comics. Don't do it. It's a great way to get yourself absolutely blacklisted and before I even begin. So I'm going to save that. But I do have some other public commentators that I've had some funny thoughts about. I'm going to save for next week. So next week, way funnier. Way, way funnier. But I hope maybe you learned something, at least, in this show. And I hope you, you know, had a good time with your father, or you gave him a call. So with that, I'm going to call this a show. You can talk to me on Facebook, Lower Your Expectation. I'm also on Instagram, Lower Your Expectation Podcast. Email me, loweryourexpectationpodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to try to get like a discussion or something going on the website. But for right now, that's the best way to reach me, is probably on Facebook. So I hope you have a great rest of the week, and hope you stay tuned for next week's episode. But before you go,
this is some ride or die shit. Like, this is ride or die shit. And I would never... God, what he did is bad, trying to fuck like 15-year-old boys or whatever. I actually don't know specifically what he did. I know there was that kid who was in the Star Trek series that he tried to fuck when he was like 16. I think that was specifically all I know. But man, the fact that Kevin Spacey let it go for like a year.
Dad, are you gonna pay me the money or not?
No, I'm not gonna.
You went.
Remember? I know what you did.
You did this
You're
video.
All right, just get the
hell out of here.
I got a goddamn
video on YouTube.
The one thing you do care about. Okay, then I quit as your son.